You're listening to the FQXI podcast. So, there we have it. It from bit or bit from it, the physics of information is this year's essay topic. Information, I was about to say, is of course so fundamental, but maybe that should be thrown open to discussion given our essay topic this year. But information is, of course, fundamental to computing, which involves processing information, and in our body, information is stored in DNA within cells.
So it makes sense to bring these two together, which is exactly what Timothy Liu, a synthetic biologist at MIT, and his colleagues are doing. He works on DNA computing, artificially manipulating the function of a cell. The research could have applications in medicine and beyond, for instance, to help detect biological weapons. Reporter Karin Pikama has been chatting with Liu and his colleague Piero Ciuti about the benefits and the ethics of computing with DNA.
My name is Timothy Liu. I'm an assistant professor at MIT, where I'm appointed in the Department of Biological Engineering, as well as the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. And generally, my research area focuses on synthetic biology.
The goal of synthetic biologists is to design and build new biological devices and systems, or even redesign existing biological systems in order to enable useful manipulation of these systems. To manipulate biological systems, synthetic biologists are having to tap into the essential building blocks of life, the genetic code, or DNA. DNA, which is short for deoxyribonucleic acid, is nature's storage device for genetic information that makes us what we are. It can be found in the nuclei of all cells in our body. Almost all of the cells in our body have the same DNA, and in spite of all the differences we see between people, we share over 99% of our DNA. Given the vital importance of DNA to life, it is not surprising that synthetic biologists are looking for ways of making and manipulating DNA directly. And some very promising steps have been made towards their goals over the past decade or so. Liu is one of those scientists. Together with his colleagues at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he's working on DNA computing. This is the ability to artificially manipulate the function of a cell by introducing completely new strands of DNA into the cell and by controlling this DNA to make the cell behave in certain ways. The potential of this research is enormous and could impact dramatically on our lives, from the way in which we treat diseases to the rapid detection of harmful chemicals in our environment. Liu and his colleagues made a breakthrough in this research that was published in Nature Biotechnology in February of this year. I spoke with Liu and with the lead author of the paper, Dr. Piero Ciuti, via Skype. I first asked Liu to explain the two different strands of DNA computing.
If we're talking about DNA computing, there's been a rich history of folks who have been looking at using DNA as a memory storage device and a computational device, primarily in vitro. So outside of cells. On the other hand, there's a complementary field of synthetic biology where folks are primarily interested in engineering circuits inside of living cells. And so there, DNA is a natural substrate for genetic programming because, you know, as we know, it contains, the blueprint for what cells are instructed to do. And so by basically modifying the DNA inside of a cell, you can instruct the cell to perform different computations inside of living cells.
So researchers like Liu are using principles that come from electronics and applying them to living cells by using DNA. By doing this, they not only expect to gain a better understanding of how biology works, but, and this is perhaps more exciting, they also hope to use these circuits to program the cells to perform new functions. This opens up an entirely novel set of possibilities that are beyond the reach with scientists' current toolkit. Our DNA is made up of four different chemical bases: adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine, or perhaps better known by their initials A, T, G, and C. Our DNA contains about 3 billion of these bases. The information needed to build a human being is determined within the order of these bases. Each base pairs up with another base to form the rungs of the famous double helix ladder. A always pairs with T and G always pairs with C. Lou explains how he uses this knowledge in DNA computing.
Every cell in your body uses ATGC to basically define, you know, what is going on inside of your body, how your body reacts to certain situations, how it grows, etc. We use those same ATGs and Cs, but we put them together in different orders. And by doing that, we basically can create new novel genetic programs that perform specific functions. The thing that we really leverage is a class of proteins known as recombinases. And these recombinases, essentially what they do is that they recognize a specific stretch of DNA, and they can flip the DNA. And so if you imagine a DNA strand with all these ATGs and Cs, as kind of a long ticker tape of information. And these recombinase enzymes being able to come in, recognize specific pieces of that DNA, and flip the DNA or cut out a piece of DNA, then that really gives you the power to store and manipulate information in DNA. When, for example, a piece of DNA is in one orientation, we can call that the off state or a zero state in digital logic. And if you flip it upside down, we can call that a one state, for example, or an on state. And so that kind of flipping event gives you the ability to record memory into DNA. And the nice thing about that is that the living cell has all the machinery needed to replicate its own DNA very faithfully. So once you've made this mutation, the cell naturally propagates that to its progeny, and it's stably maintained as memory for a long period of time.
Manipulating the cell's memory in this way is one step in the direction of the ultimate goal to be able to switch DNA inside cells on and off. In their recent Nature Biotechnology paper, Lou and his postdoc Piero Ciuti have come a step closer to this goal. Ciuti explains why this study was so important.
The challenge is to actually be able to sort of combine processing and memory in one single device. So far, it's been done with different kinds of cells, that each one of which has a different gene circuit in it. And what we did is that we took advantage of these recombinase enzymes and developed a more like recombinase-based strategy in order to build all of the functions, all of them in one single cell.
So this was the first time the two, memory and logic, were put together into one cell. Lou explains how logic is actually achieved within the cell.
The way you do that is that you basically, inside of that DNA sequence, that's either zero or one, you can put there specific DNA elements that encode regulatory function. So for example, you can put things called promoters. And what promoters are is they're essentially genetic switches that turn on or turn off expression of a gene. For example, GFP, or green fluorescent protein that we use to visualize these cells. And so you can imagine if you flip that promoter from one orientation to the other, you can turn on or turn off its function. There are several advantages of DNA-based computation. One of it is that you can develop many, many, many parallel reactions. So a single test tube can have, you know, a large amount of computation going on in parallel, even though each computation itself may be somewhat slow. So that kind of parallelized computation may be useful for certain situations. I think the other major advantage, especially in the context of living cells, is that DNA is a natural interface with cellular function. And so inserting these kind of circuits into the cell does not cause immune reactions or some other rejection of the circuit that you're inserting to the cell. Whereas if you try to insert, you know, a silicon chip or other things into a cell, you may have issues associated with that.
This ability to tinker with the way in which cells function, including, of course, our own cells, might worry some people. While sophisticated manipulation of cells that could potentially be used to do harm is still a long way off, Lou and his colleagues in the field of synthetic biology do think about the ethical implications of their research.
There is a concern with genetic engineering of any type. I mean, essentially what we do is advanced versions of genetic engineering. And so there are, you know, governmental and institutional controls on specifically what can be done. And the practitioners in the field are very much aware of the ethics and the safety questions associated with our research. So, at our conferences and at many of our meetings, there are a significant amount of time devoted to, you know, dealing with what are the ethics and the safety that we need to take into account.
So now the researchers are capable of safely manipulating the function of cells by introducing engineered DNA into the cell. This opens up a vast array of possibilities for advancements in fields ranging from medicine to engineering and climate change. For instance, in the development of detectors of biological weapons and the focus on biological alternatives for our ever-increasing fuel consumption. One of the areas of research Lewis particularly excited about is the potential of these circuits in medicine for the detection of cancer.
It gives you much finer control over what you can do inside of a living cell. So let's take an example. Suppose I wanted to engineer a bacteria that's probiotic. So maybe I want to engineer a bacteria similar to the bacteria that you eat in your yogurt. That, you know, your yogurt contains live cultures. You're constantly eating that bacteria. It can go into the gut and then it comes out. Well, suppose I wanted to turn that bacteria into some sort of sensor. Let's say I wanted the bacteria to perhaps detect, you know, whether there's a signature that you're developing colon cancer, right? And we like to do this very early on, you know, way before it's detectable by colonoscopy or, you know, bleeding in the stool or whatever. So we could put in a genetic circuit into the bacteria and have it, for example, contain an AND gate. And this AND gate would only turn on if both of its inputs are true. For example, you could say, you know, if I detect, you know, a bleed inside of the colon, and I detect some other biomarker of colon cancer, then I flip the switch on. And, you know, you can imagine this probiotic bacteria then going through, acting as kind of a non-invasive sensor and coming out the other end with some readout of whether, you know, it detected some sort of signature that's indicative of cancer. That's just a toy example, but it's the kind of stuff that this type of platform, as well as other platforms that folks are developing, may be useful for in the long term.
And Suti gives a very different example of how strategic use of these modified cells can be particularly useful for detecting harmful substances in our air and liquids. He describes how a modified group of cells might be particularly effective in protecting against attacks with biological weapons by sensing when there has been a change in the environment caused by such harmful chemicals.
For example, the police officer, all they have to do if there's any dangerous looking chemical or liquids, all they have to do is just basically put a little drop on the device that contains these cells, and that if there's anything that can be dangerous, they can detect it and give you a product right away. That's one of the longer ideas of applications for it. It still needs some more work on when it comes to how fast we can get the product. But yeah, that's one of the potential applications to it.
So research in synthetic biology could have a far-reaching impact on our lives, from our protection and safety to our health. It has the potential to revolutionize the detection and treatment of currently untreatable diseases, and it may one day defeat our predispositions for diseases that are hardwired into our genetic makeup. And Suti thinks that the applications he and Lou are considering can be achieved in a not too distant future, though it all depends a little on the synthetic biologists themselves.
Considering how fast science has developed in the past 20, 30 years and how fast synthetic biology has moved in the past 15 years, I would truly say I can see this being quite possible in the next 10 to maybe 15 years. The way I see it, there are only two things that synthetic biologists are limited by, and I think it's their creativity and how hard they're willing to work for their projects. So I truly think that actually it's coming really fast.
Thank you to Timothy Liu and Piro Suti for explaining their research to Corinne Picamo there. You'll find links to their research paper in Nature Biotechnology on our podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.